Welcome, one and all, to Judging Nerd Culture, where we talk about all the good and the bad parts about everything you love and hate. I'm Raul Alejandro González Enriquez. You can call me Ali, and my lovely co-host as usual.
I'm Coop. You can call me Pookie.
Woo! Pookie! All right, that was exciting. Today we're talking about an amazing fucking movie that if you haven't seen it when you were younger, then you really missed out. It's called Princess Mononoke.
They haven't really missed out yet, but you will need something in your house that can play, like, physical DVDs, probably. I mean, I don't know, you can probably get it on Amazon Instant Video for a rental for $1.99, which the fact that you can rent things electronically is real weird to me. But in any case, you know, it's still there, which is part of why we're doing this, you know.
It is hard to find, though. Like, we were looking for it in various sites and places, and we ended up just going out to buy it because we couldn't locate it.
But yeah, this one's kind of old. This is like a 90s anime film.
What year was it, actually? Because, like, I watched it when I was pretty young. I was born in 93. So Princess Mononoke came out in 1997. I was somehow a little older than that. I was, like, maybe five, so I watched it, like, a year late.
Yeah. I only ever, saw it for real in my teens, so I guess that would have been your, you know, return, or one of your returns, or whatever. But this is a, this is by Studio Ghibli, directed by Hayao Miyazaki, like a famous studio and a famous filmmaker that famous for making films with a very particular style. And this is one of their earlier ones, Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle. I feel like those were the big ones that got, like, this studio as, you know, household name as it is, but...
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, it's the one that's most separated in style, in tone, than the rest of them.
Well, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen every single one or anything like that. Sure, but, like, there's not nearly as, like, this is... violent.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which makes the fact that I watched it when I was like 5 years old kind of funny to me.
Admittedly, you know,
my parents, like, did not care.
It is surprisingly violent for the expectations you have of a Ghibli movie, but it's not so, like, you know, it's not, we're not in Doom, we're not Afro Samurai territory, like, it's not,
I don't know, man,
disastrously.
At least 6 arms got ripped off.
Yes, basically nothing bleeds, though. Like,
everybody's
limbs and heads and stuff are kind of, like, jerky. Like, if there were big blood splatters, it would be a little more disturbing, but there still is a bit of, like, sometimes there's some comedic timing to the, you know, okay. We're gonna get into it, but Ali, why don't you tell us a little bit about the plot? Actually,
why don't you tell us a little bit?
I should probably do that first, huh?
Yeah.
Because then, okay, it's the seasoning, right?
Yeah, tell us about the Studio Ghibli style, Hayao Miyazaki style movies.
Yes. Okay. So we're gonna do something a little different, like, kind of going forward. We have just talked among ourselves and, like, the stuff we have the most fun talking about and we imagine everyone has the most fun listening to is our, you know, biggest impressions with positive or negative things in whatever it is we're reviewing, which for this is going to be a lot of positives, I imagine. But, so we're kind of restructuring to, you know, we're going to brisk through the overview and the plot a little more quickly than usual so we can get to, like, the, oh, what was your favorite? You know, the hype talk, But I'm going to go ahead and start. So if you are, you know, under an animation rock somehow and don't have any background in these Studio Ghibli Hayao Miyazaki films, they have a very specific visual style. Like, it's definitely, you know, anime in appearance, but it lacks a whole lot of the, like, cliches and just, you know, anime visual signifier tropes that a lot of people find off-putting about that genre, including oftentimes myself, depending. The animation of... So a lot of stuff, a lot of every visual media, like lots of movies, you know, the reason we have, like, big dumb action blockbusters is because filmmakers are really afraid for there to ever be any, like, downtime and quiet moments. Studio Ghibli films do not have that insecurity in any way. Like, the, you know, we're probably, like, 65% just, like, calm traveling and conversation, and like, you know, it's not meandering. Like, it's not the problem I kind of had with Lord of the Rings, where it's just like, wow, look at the scenery, we're gonna spend way too long. Like the pace and the timing of everything is like just right. You know, you spend enough time with the characters in, you know, important but relatively like, you know, not necessarily even lower stakes, but just low intensity conversation and development and that kind of thing.
Well, it's like, you mentioned, like, you know, it's not meandering the way the Lord of the Rings sort of felt sometimes. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that every time they are just looking at the scenery, they're contemplating like, oh man, this is changing. And like, the fact that the scenery itself is changing from something that we understand to something that is new and whatever adds a lot more impact and more, like, effect to what we're doing.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, it's all, you know, not, like, hashtag relatable, but just, like, act like the conveyance of, like, melancholy and kind of, like, nostalgic, or just, like, those, you know, emotions that are not nearly as easy to sell in movies as, you know, the common ones, humor, lust, and violence. Violence is an emotion that counts.
I almost, for, I don't know why, but I thought you were going to connect, I thought you were going to make lust and violence the same thing.
I mean, there's bloodlust, but that's not quite the same as what I'm getting at. In any case, like, the any of the characters that show up, even if they don't really have like a complete arc, they just emote and talk and exist in the world like totally real people. Like, everything in one of these films is super believable, even if the whole, you know, how this and that and, you know, how these societies work isn't like explained in immense detail. And in this one, like, we do get a lot of, you know, a lot of like calm, steady pace world building before all of the shit hits the fan. But like, you know, everything is just so, you know, like, this could be a very real place. Like, everything seems, it's so convincing. I don't know. And the way the visuals sell it too, it's not obviously like photorealistic or everything, but, and this is not really my words, like, this is the descriptor that comes in from all over the place, but like, the characters and the emotions and stuff they express look like how those emotions feel when you are having them. Like, if some, you know, the classic thing is if someone cries in a Ghibli movie, the tears don't look like real life tears, which are just like little drips. They are like these just massive like fountains, not like exaggerated for comedy, but just, you know, it feels, it looks as like blubbery and wet and just, you know,
yeah,
overtaken as you feel when you are crying. Like, oh, I must look like such a mess, like the characters do.
I think my favorite effect with the crying, which we do see here, not in the crying exactly, but we do see it anyways, is the like oozing, bubbling out, that where it's just like all your emotions just kind of falling out of your face.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And this particular film has lots of fun animals. And they are really, really, like, animated in a way that's, like, you know, not just the way a dog, you know, or a wolf, you know, specifically actually moves, but, like, the way a dog, like, wants to be perceived when it's being intimidating is how these wolves actually look. Like, yeah. And there's a lot of boars. We get a lot of good boar action. And I like pigs. You know, not everybody does. That's fine. Like, they have kind of weird faces.
Pigs are incredibly smart. It's weird.
Yeah. Not these ones necessarily. You know, they like any civilization, there's smartos and dumbos. But, you know, these guys have very exaggerated, warty, snorfling, squishy faced, like wrinkled. Yeah, it's just so, you know, the emotions and the, you know, not like everything looks exactly right physically, but it looks exactly right in its emotional content. It's difficult to describe. You gotta watch one of these, and by my money, this specific movie to get what we're getting at. But
yeah, everything also has a really impressive texture. Like you said, you called it snorfling, which beautiful word.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you can, like just looking at it, I can feel it on my skin. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's serious. And this one in particular, Princess Mononoke, gets into some, you know, super cool action and violence and stuff, mostly concerning the main character. Anytime there's fighting anywhere else, it is pretty much just, you know, tragic. The main character at least has some exaggerated spectacle because our hero, you know, unwillingly and not unpurposely, well, that's the same thing, right? It's he didn't even know this was possible in the world until it happened to him, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Inherits some less unsavory but useful, like, supernatural abilities that are extremely fun to watch. We'll get into the specifics of that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think that about covers it. Like the it's got to be seen to be believed, but if you're listening to this, you know, finish the episode and then go watch the movie. So, you know, tell you some more. But, I mean, from this point, spoilers are all the way on, and yet it doesn't matter. For not this, like, I think in general, ever, but for this specific movie, you want to ride along and see it and feel it as it plays out. It, you know, the acts of the plot are, you know, secondary to the experience.
Yeah, I, like I mentioned, I watched this when I was, like, 5 years old, and then again when I was, like, 16 with you bunch of losers.
Yes.
And watching it again just the other day, I did not realize how much of it I did not experience when I watched it the first few times.
I do want to throw in there, though, there are no wasted lines ever in a Studio Ghibli movie in general, and in this one, you know, for sure. Like anytime anyone's doing anything on screen, I mean, sometimes there's just goofs and gags, but even the stuff that seems like it's just going to be a joke of the moment does seem to kind of pan out later on. I'll get into the specifics later of what I mean by this, but, you know, if you're going to watch one of these, don't be like, I'll put it on in the background and do some work on my laptop, or like, you know, if you want to digest it for real, you want to be all in, which is not an experience that is always or even mostly true about movies, which is like, we could probably do better, right?
I mean, we could definitely do better. But I feel like that's the slogan for all of America and all cinema.
Right, sure. But specifically, it's just like, you know, I could throw on a fucking, you know, any of the Star Wars movies and probably just tune in and out partway through and get the gist just fine. But this is like really, you know, if you want to have the full context for what's going on, you bringing up us watching this in high school was what made me think of that, like, yeah, I definitely didn't retain a whole lot of the more interesting pieces because we were probably, you know, fucking off and hitting each other with pillows and stuff. Yeah. Very romantic times.
Very in love we were.
Oh, yes. In any case. So, what fucking happens in this movie? I've forgotten everything. Please tell
me. So, yeah, I'm just going to jump into the plot synopsis, do a quick jab at all the scenes if I can. Alright, so this story starts off with the protagonist, whose name I forgot to write down.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I had it up on a screen earlier. He is Prince Ashitaka.
Yes. So it starts off with Prince Ashitaka, and he's riding the coolest goddamn
red elk.
It was a red elk, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm never 100% sure what an elk actually is, but this one's a red elk. It's got cool big horns.
It's, you know, like a deer, antelope, like there's, I think, I don't know if it looks exactly like an elk. Like, the horns to me seem more antelope-y. It's one of those kinds of animals.
And it's just really cool. And immediately with that, I felt more of a fantastical feel to it. Like, oh, we can ride whatever the hell we want in this show. And the action in this movie kicks off immediately as this massive tendrilled monster just rampages through the nearby village, his village. And the kid springs into action, and it's clear that he's not starting at level one. He's starting halfway to level to max level. This kid is powerful and skilled.
Yeah, yeah. Automatically, like, really competent at archery specifically. Mm-hmm. Like he's a bow boy.
Yeah, a strong bow boy, but a bow boy.
Yes,
bow. Those are words.
You've got to be strong to be a bow boy back in like. Feudal. This is essentially feudal Japan. Yeah. Nobody says Japan, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the feel of it, which is actually kind of critical to the ideas later. But as he's running towards it, trying to stop it, instead of just shooting at it immediately, he starts going, "Hey, forest spirits, creature beyond our regular understanding, please stop this." And it's clear that this character isn't just competent physically, he's also aware that there are things above and beyond what's going on in the regular life, and is trying to communicate and, work things out before having to get violent, which is so damn different.
Yeah, that's nice. Like, we get the, we don't spend a whole lot of time in this village, but we get the impression that they are, like, very much... like, everyone is cognizant of these things. It's not like he is specifically, like, Mr. Magic Boy or whatever. Like, this is the teachings, like, these guys are... And, I mean, you can, the language of just, like, his steed is not a horse. It's something more kind of foresty and secretive. It's just, like, these are, like, a people who live in harmony with nature vibe situation. And so he's trying his best to do that because he doesn't want to kill something without, as good of a reason as possible.
Unfortunately, it cannot get across to this creature, and the fight begins. He shoots it a few times, manages to land a killing hit on it, but not before some of the undulating, like, tendrils splurt out onto him, infecting his arm.
It's just like a bunch of black worms amassed. Yeah.
Like, just giant earthworms sticking out of every direction. And they cover his arm and seem to infect him in some way. They scar him. I believe it's his right arm.
Yeah.
And he goes back to his village. And in my original, one of my first two watches of this, I thought this was a far more, like, aggressive, angry thing. But it's really a lot more solemn and a lot more like, you're our prince, why we are really sad to see you go. But you're cursed now. This thing that infected him is going to kill him. Is going to eat away at his flesh and bones until he dies. And he doesn't appreciate that. No one does. Everyone's sad. But he has to leave in order to figure out where the monster came from. And try to fix things. Try to do what he can before he passes.
Yeah, it's basically like a stay and die. Or leave and maybe get yourself cured. But either way, he can't come back. Like, it's not described until later, but this civilization is hiding for a reason. Like, it's purposely secluded.
Mm-hmm. And he leaves, and it's rather tender. It seems like one of his village mates gives him a pendant that is significant to them. And it's not a thing that is brought up, really. Like, he gives it to someone else later on, but it's not... mentioned this was his sister, this was that. I think she does call him brother.
Yeah.
So it's clear there's a relationship, and it establishes feeling and, like, how deep some of this stuff goes, but it doesn't spend a whole lot of time with it. It just does it really quickly and really skillfully.
And just to throw it out there, the tendril demon thing, when killed, vacated, it was like infecting a boar, like a big ass boar. Yeah. I mean, this is boars can get large, but this is bigger than in nature, like larger than life, and it also spoke even as it was decaying, but it was just like, we're gonna come for you all, the destruction is gonna, like, blah blah blah, the ravings of
an angry dead creature.
Yeah.
And it was mm-hmm. gross looking. It was also, again, like you said, it's a dire boar. Its snout goes up to his head.
Yes,
standing. So big boys. Mm-hmm. And but he takes off. He's got the cool cloak. He's got his steed. He goes off in the direction, and within seconds, another fucking fight springs up.
Well, I mean, he could have been traveling for days and days. I mean, they just cut to the good part.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
if we were still watching Solo, they would have just showed him walking down the road the entire time. But
he immediately gets into another altercation, this time with humans, and they seem to be attacking just a regular village, and he, as a genuinely good person, goes, that's not right, and intercedes.
Yeah, I think at first he just yells at them. This is specifically as, like, samurai are coming and, like, you know, tax collecting or whatever. Like, it is, you know, the emperor's guys are coming to squeeze stuff out of the village or what. Like, yeah. they give you the impression really fast, but it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, and he continually tries not to fight until the last possible moment. He doesn't shoot an arrow until one of the samurai is hacking at the back of a woman who's holding a child. Luckily, she had a big backpack thing, yeah. So she didn't die. And he whips out his bow and arrow and shoots it, and his infected arm bubbles and tendrils, and the arrow shoots out so damn quickly that it cuts off the arms of the samurai.
Yeah, both arms. So that's like our first case. This sort of thing continues to happen. Like, the demon arm reacts to any situation of violence, and it always looks extremely gross. Like, yeah. If I picture my arm doing that, that's very disturbing. Like, the skin, like, and he keeps it covered at all times. Like, you never really see the skin doing it. It's always closed, but still, it's like,
yeah, it doesn't seem pleasant. He doesn't seem to enjoy this by any means.
No. But he then has drawn attention to himself, and he has to continue to fight, and he, like, knocks dudes' heads off.
Yeah.
And without,
again, with arrows.
Mm-hmm. And not, yeah, exactly. Tiny points that should not have the slashing action to do that. And again, nobody bleeds, but it's like, you know, if you brought your tiny kid to the theater to see this, you're gonna be surprised.
Indeed. And, so he manages to fend off some of these warriors and save a number of people. And honestly, that's the majority of his encounter. He goes from here and just keeps going on. He saved who he could, but he knows this is not the place where he's going to find any answers, so he keeps moving on. And we transition in the movie to another set of humans who are making a trek up this mountain with a variety of supplies and ox, and, you know, they seem like a regular caravan, really doing merchant-style stuff. Maybe a little bit more industrialized with their weapons than the places we just came from.
Yeah, this is like a extremely early guns,
yeah,
have been introduced.
And as they're climbing this way, they begin to get attacked by three massive wolves.
Yeah, again, these are, you know, wolf plus, like, exaggerated, and there's a good reason for this.
Yes.
You know, it's not just stylistic, but yeah.
And on one of these wolves rides a young girl with a cool mask,
who you probably recognize from the cover of the box or the poster of the movie, that this is, you know,
the princess.
Yes.
Mononoke.
Yes.
And, the wolves attack and wreck some shit. You find out quickly that the lead wolf, the biggest one, is the wolf god. Whatever, yes, the heck that actually means in this context. I am not 100% sure.
It's a very, you know, the term god is thrown around faster and looser in this than, like, you know,
most
Western
things.
Mythologies are, like, you know, Western religions, rather, excuse me, are prone to throwing around.
To be fair, if I saw a wolf that their haunches were at my head and its head was higher up, I'd call that a god.
Sure. The rules of being one or the other is, like, you know, not ever explicitly stated. You just, yeah, go with it.
And later on, you do determine that they can speak as well. They just don't to humans, because fuck them.
Yeah.
And instead, they just bite their heads off and fight through, because they're attempting to keep their forest human-free as possible.
They're trying to assassinate the leader,
yes,
who's present here.
Yes. The leader is a real cool lady, which I did write her name down, Lady Eboshi.
Yes.
As the wolves attack and they are being fended off by the primitive guns that these characters have, which shoot, instead of bullets, just chunks of metal ore the size of a lime.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these are, like, this is the era in which guns are halfway between a modern gun and, like, fireworks launchers, or cannons, rather.
Tiny cannonball.
It's, you know, yeah, just pellet balls rather than, like, a bullet-shaped bullet.
Mm-hmm. And before the character even left his village, they had determined that what had killed this boar and what caused it to mutate and be infected was this chunk of metal that had been in shot into this character, into him. So it becomes clear that these humans are the ones causing these animals to go become this thing.
And initially it's framed up like a mystery. Like, people are like, what, this tiny thing? Like the people in his village clearly do not know what guns are. Like, nobody has any idea. It's just like, this iron ball caused the suffering somehow. Like, it takes on, like, a magicness to him at first before seeing and, like, quickly adapting to the information of, like, oh, these do that. This is the place, you know, I'm on the right track.
Yeah. And, the Lady Eboshi manages to get a good hit in on the god wolf, shooting them right in the chest, and they fly off the mountain that they're climbing. And, while it seems like, oh, well, they won, she immediately reminds everyone, that's a god. It's fine. It survived.
And even, like, animals and people can come back from unlikely getting shot and still, you know...
Yeah, well, getting shot and falling off a mountain.
Right.
But the other wolves and the lady, or the princess, abscond as they have fought as best they can, pushed many of their enemies off of the mountain and along with their ox and whatever else. And this is where our hero comes back in, or one of them, I suppose, because eventually all of the characters become hero-esque in their own right. And he sees many of the men and ox just floating in the river, some still alive, and again goes, well, I'm going to help people, because why not?
Sure.
And he picks up some of the men out of the river and patches them up as best he can. And this is where it becomes apparent that these are very differing cultures as spirits appear, and the humans that he helped freak the fuck out. And he goes, oh, they're forest spirits. They're here to, you know, just watch over us and be kind and pleasant. And the other one is shitting his pants.
Yeah, I don't know if the Kodamas, like, and these guys are extremely cute, too. Like, if you've ever seen anything from this movie, it probably involves these guys. They're just literally, like, little infant-sized humanoid ghost shapes, but their heads, like, they just have three holes that kind of resemble eyes and a mouth, but are not always aligned that way.
And their heads shake like little, like, noise-rattling things.
But, it's indicated, like, these are to be trusted. And I don't know if, like, Ashitaka has ever seen any of these in person before. Like, he acts as though he has, or at least has just heard about them. But, like, it is, you know, stated sort of in between that, like, and he's, like, stopped at a town in between at some point, too. It just wasn't, like, that big of a deal. We're trying to move at a decent pace. But, like, where he's headed is one of the forests in which, like, ancient spirits are still active, and they have been sort of stamped out of everywhere else. Yeah. So he's heard about these things, but not, you know, to my understanding, actually seen them before. But he just rolls with it right away.
Yeah, and I did skip over him stopping at the merchant place.
It's a big deal.
All that really happens is he buys some rice with a nugget of gold, and people freak out, and there's an old man who becomes relevant later, but is shifty, shady, and weird.
Yeah. And is, like, indicates, hey, I know where you came from. This is, that the only, like, major bit I think we get from that is that Ashitaka's people, the reason they're so secluded is that they are, like, some, I don't know, like, it could be just an ethnic thing, like a divergent there or something, or just, like, a family or something, like a civilization that fell into disfavor with the emperor, like the still sitting emperor. So allegedly they were all wiped out. Like, literally it was just, hey, these guys have to go, and then the empire sent their entire army to fuck them up. The ones who could escape have kept their civilization going in secret, but that's why Ashitaka can't come back. Like, they can't risk anybody, you know, revealing the place. So he has that, you know, that kind of hanging over his head, but also a sense of empathy from that's going to matter later on.
Mm-hmm. So he helps the people that he can save from the river who manage to survive. He helps get them through the forest at the dismay of them. And once they get from one side to the other, they arrive basically at the entrance of their village, a walled-off mountain village that has what seems to be primitive factories built up and billowing smoke.
Primitive to us, this is like the height of technology in this world.
This is next level shit.
Iron Town.
Exactly. And they, you know, they show up and he gets them home. And at first everyone freaks out like, who the fuck are you? But also, thank you. And this is where we meet Lady Eboshi for real, where we get her name and we start to see her characterization.
She has a lot going on. This, yeah. Like, in a cool way. Like, this is an extremely, like, layers upon layers in this character. You know, I don't know if we should save this for later or camp out on it now.
We can do a little bit, but mm-hmm. we can spend more time on it later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, we meet Lady Eboshi, and she takes us through the town because she's impressed with this kid. He is impressed that, first of all, he saved, you know, these people, and also that he came through the forest, and just an impressive fella. And as she takes you to the town, she reveals that, one, while she has been, we understand that she's the villain. She's the one that infected the boar. She's the reason he's cursed. She's also just seems to be, you know, human, and the humans aren't the best in this, as shown by the rampant murder they attempt. But that being said, she reveals, this village is headed mostly, like, by women, who I bought out of slavery from brothels and have given homes and protection to and empowered. And they have become one of the most powerful industrialized villages in this entire area.
Yeah, everyone loves her. Like, this is the most admired ruler in fiction. Like, she is seriously, you know, 100% popularity rating. I mean, like, and it's warranted. Like, yeah. You know, because there's, you know, there's controversial aspects to that. Like, these people definitely believe everything she says, and the things she says are not always right. But, I mean, she is doing way more for her people than, you know, the distant emperor, who never shows up in the movie, just, you know, to clear it up. But his presence is felt, like, does not give a shit about the peasantry and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. like she is the best leader figure we really see, at least among humans.
Yes.
The animals' dynamic is different, so.
And, so while she is, you know, kind of the reason the forest is slowly dying, like, they're purposefully deforesting the area so as to separate themselves from the spirits who attack them to make a more safe home for themselves. But in doing so, they're taking away these creatures' homes. And she doesn't, when she speaks, she never comes off as evil. She always comes off as doing the best she can for the people that she cares about and just not caring about the others as much.
I mean, she does talk a lot about, like, oh, when I take over the world, which, that's a very, you know, I mean, this is the era for that, right?
Yeah.
People won't just out and say it nowadays, but that's what they mean. That, like, in these times, that was literally just like, hey, you know, I'm in charge of this place, might as well take over all the other places. Like, everyone wanted to get a piece of everything.
Yeah, that was not a unheard of dream at that time.
But, I mean, you know, if she takes over the world, it's like, you know, it's gonna be better for women than it would be if she, like, at least in Japan otherwise, or, you know, fake Japan, whatever, like.
Yeah, it might have a bit of pollution, but otherwise it's not gonna be the worst.
Yeah, yeah, they haven't learned about pollution
yet. Yeah, you know, we can't knock them for not knowing science yet. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she definitely has a my people first, no matter what, I'm gonna take care of them, even if it means tearing down the forest and mm-hmm. doing things that, even she does remark, seem a little cold.
Which is an attitude that many share in this movie, but yeah.
Yeah. And she takes Akatashi?
Ashitaka.
Ashitaka.
Close.
Oh, so close. Mm-hmm. Ashitaka into the back, her personal garden, where she reveals that a lot of her weapons are made by lepers.
Yes.
That's a thing.
I like, just, you know, here, my little house where I keep the leper weaponsmiths is not like a sentence that comes up in films. Like, and, you know, they're all super bandaged up and are just like, yeah, you know, anyone else would have just had us burned. Like, we came here because we knew that Lady Eboshi was not going to fuck us over. And, like, we still get to do stuff with our hands. Like,
yeah.
You know, everybody is put to work in this town, but they appreciate, like, everybody is treated dignifiedly.
Yeah.
And, like, Lady Eboshi seems like she knows everyone's names, like, it's a super, you know.
Yeah, like, everyone works real hard and they have to work, but mm-hmm. also everyone gets given equal benefits for what they do.
I want to, like, a timeout real quick. I think it's a little weird, and ultimately I got used to it, and then I was like, you know, if I meet it halfway, I can make it make sense. In the English dub, which is what we listened to, what we watched and listened to, Lady Eboshi is the only one who has, like, an English accent, like a posh English accent, which is a little weird. I mean, it does just kind of, like, the stereotypes associated with that accent do definitely fit the character, and if I was like, oh, she maybe comes from somewhere else, and that's where some of these, like, comparatively radical ideas might have come from as well. Like, maybe she is, you know, a foreigner or something who is, like, not like a foreigner from, you know, she still is, like, ethnically similar to everyone in that anime way where it's, you know, very, very vague. But, like, just, I don't know. I could make it make sense in the story, but I have no idea if that's still true in the original Japanese, like, if she has a different accent on purpose, or if it was just,
I think
that's the, like, here are all of the actors we could get who were willing to do voice work in this anime business, when it was still pretty brand new. Yeah. I don't know.
It might have also just been used to portray she's slightly more educated and posh than the rest
of
them.
Yeah, that's
which is a pretty shorthand way to do that sort of thing for, you know, whatever that means. Mm-hmm.
Compared to some of the people, like, the people in town who have, like, it's not really, a southern accent, but they've just got, you know, ain'ts and y'alls and that kind of thing.
Yeah, they got some real drawls to them.
Yes. You know, it doesn't really matter one way or another, but maybe when I was younger I might have thought that was weird, or just not fucking noticed because I was a blockhead, but, you know, now I'm like, yeah, I could make that make sense to myself. Anyway, you know, I think she probably has one of the strongest voice performances in the movie. Like,
very skillful.
But indeed. In any case, that's Lady Eboshi corner. We're gonna, you know.
Indeed. And honestly, just a quick aside, the voice acting this is very good, despite the fact that it was made in the 90s when voice acting had yet to be practiced in any way, to be honest.
Yeah, this is a review of the dub specifically, but, like, you know, there's definitely some kind of weird deliveries here and there, but it like for its time, it's really good, and, like, it's not distractingly, you know, poor or anything by today's standards.
No, it's almost on par, I would say.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, being led around, he's meeting the people, he's meeting some of the women, he helps them do some of their factory work and uses way too much strength and realizes, oh, I'm gonna get tired real quick doing this. And it's just cute, it's fun, it's very him weirdly falling in love with this village that he knows is the bad guy.
Yeah. And they all fall in love with him, too, pretty quick. There are various people around who are like, hey, we can't trust strangers no matter what, because these guys, like, it's a similar dynamic to his home village, where they are, like, you know, like, mostly outcasts have settled in here and are building up to defend themselves from this overreaching emperor. So, you know, he has a kinship with them right away.
Indeed. And as, you know, they're all building up their feelings for one another in the kinship sort of way, Princess Mononoke makes her arrival.
Yes.
In the most badass sort of way, too. Her riding on one of her wolf brothers, just full sprint at the barricaded spiked walls and hit it sideways so fast that her riding on the wolf's back just get launched straight over the wall.
Yeah, anytime action sets in this, it is fast. And, like, you know, they're not like, ooh, this is super cool, we should do a slow-mo, like, linger. Like, no, it's just all, like, beat by beat, you gotta be ready. And yeah, she's like, I love her movements. Like, before you even know the character, she's so scampery. Like, this is the ultimate expression of, like, a Raised by Wolves character in the way she moves and, like, facial expressions, and she snarls and stuff. Like, it's, you know, she can still speak, but it's, yeah, it's just cool.
Because, of course, her wolves can also speak.
Right. Yeah.
So, she joins the fray, and she's on a mission to murder the shit out of Lady Eboshi, because despite being a decent person as far as the village goes, she is murdering a lot of animals and destroying their home.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
the animals here are moderately sentient,
yes,
if not completely.
Yeah, and they are sort of aware of that. I mean, yes, like, the there's a scene earlier where, like, you know, they are shooting into, like, recently chopped down tree zones because all of the ape spirits are just going in and planting more trees whenever they clear it out. Like, that's not something that just animals do. Mm. You know, maybe by accident, but yeah.
Yeah, and it's just a, like, I'm not gonna go beat by beat, obviously. There's a cool fight and all, but it's not... I can't really describe everything that happens.
It's a walk kind of thing. No, of course.
But she does get injured for a moment, and the main character decides, oh no, I'm gonna save her, because he saw her from afar and was like, God damn, that girl's a goddess.
He's definitely smitten, but also...
is trying, like, to just be a good person.
You know, if he's... And like, I mean, he has ulterior motives, too. Yes. Like, if he's gonna get this whole demon arm thing worked out, he needs to basically... ally himself with anyone who could know anything about the situation.
And, which Wolfgar's the might.
Yeah, it is in his best interest to, you know, get in good with all of these people as best as he can. So, like, eventually the Lady Eboshi and the mysterious Princess Mononoke come to blows, and he just rolls in there and, like, effortlessly incapacitates the both of them once he... kind of calms down and lets the demon arm sort of do its thing.
Yeah, it's so good, too. There's a moment just before this, which Lady Eboshi's bodyguard guy, he holds out a large blade, which I believe are used on horses, like,
yes, when they ride horses. Yes.
I forgot the name of it. It's like a naga...
Zanbato? I don't know. It's just like, yeah, you know, where a spear would be used in a European medieval fantasy story, this is just like a, hey, I will chop all four legs off of this horse at once. Like, like, sword longer than him.
Exactly. And as the main character is realizing everything's going to shit and wants to try and stop everyone and, like, you know, calm everything down and de-escalate and leave, his arm freaks out, and then tendrils come out, but not in the same sort of physical way. They're more ethereal. And he grabs the blade and just bends it with his fingertips. It's fucking hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he goes in, incapacitates the women from killing each other, and tells the people, like, hey, I'm not going to hurt your lady. She's really cool. Here you go. We're going to leave now.
And it's clearly like, you know, you guys need her. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't remove this figure.
Yeah. And also, like, I don't think he wants to. At the very start of the fight, the Lady Eboshi mentions to Mononoke, like, hey, you're here to kill me. That's all good and whatever. Come at me. But there's also these two women who are here to kill you because you murdered their husbands. Like, it's not all one side. It's not just evil on one side or whatever. Which is typically not a thing I'm a big fan of, because I do think that there's distinctions between good and evil.
I mean, I do think that, like you know, the ultimate ending of this is pretty... agnostic of, like, you know, one of these people is clearly right or wrong or whatever. Like nobody totally understands the machinations of, like, the biggest god figure in this story. Yes. At this time. But, you know, like I still think it's kind of framed up in the capacity that, like, yeah, the humans shot first here.
Yeah.
I mean, they are literally, like, existing on this little peninsula that's, like, the only place they can defend from the... Like, they are acting out of necessity, but the animals didn't ask for this. Like,
yeah.
There could have been diplomacy. There definitely is an assertion that just, like, eh, what, you know, even if they talk, whatever. If it's them or us, let's shoot them first. Like,
yeah, no, what I'm getting at is that it implies that, like, while they're doing things that are wrong, like, they're doing wrong things for the sake of survival, but they're not evil.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Which
absolutely.
Is a more, like... metered take on it than usually we get from anime.
Nothing in this is really evil. Like,
no.
Well, I don't know.
It's debatable for
a
couple characters.
I feel like the Emperor sounds evil, or at the very least, dangerously senile. We'll talk about that later. But
well,
like,
that fits a lot of Hayao Miyazaki films.
Yes,
anti-imperialistic.
Yes, that's definitely the case. There isn't strictly like a villain, though.
Yes.
Like, everyone just needs to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
That's Ashitaki's take on this at the moment, anyway.
Yes. So he does save everyone, and like the village freaks out, like, "Hey, you can't take her. She's gonna keep trying to kill our, you know, our lady, and this and that." And they threaten him with a gun, and he's like, no, and just leaves. And
well, I mean, I think part of his his vibe is like, okay, because, you know, this is one of my favorite things, and I'll talk about it later on, too. Like, initially, all of the women in the village just are, like, kind of smitten with him. Like, you know, there may be some, like, exoticization or something going on, but not explicitly. It's just like, ooh, he's, like, clearly very strong and handsome. I mean, he walked into the village carrying a guy over his shoulder, and he's got a cool mount and, like, weird outfit. Like the ladies are all good-naturedly flirtatious with him.
It would be like if Thor just walked up into our, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, wherever.
Yeah.
He'll be like, oh, you're not from Ron, you're hot as shit.
Or if Chris Hemsworth walked in, like literally just, you know, one element or the other. Like, you know, the style doesn't really, like, sexualify anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's another common thread with Miyazaki films is, like, there's typically not big tits anime ladies ever, which is nice for a change. But my point is, like, you know, he knows, like, as soon as he came to this village, it's like, oh, I guess I'm hot. And from that point forward, his hotness is added to his bag of tools. Like, when he needs to, he's like, okay, I have this now. I can try to deploy this if I'm under attack by a woman, which there's a lot of women in this movie, which is cool. You know, I'm gonna try. I'll see what I can do about that. So, you know, he is pretty confident he's not gonna get shot. Like, he knows she doesn't want to do it, and he's turning on the charm and the, you know, the toughness and all that.
So as he's walking away, the lady is caught off guard by someone else. It's not an intentional thing, but she does fire at him.
Yeah.
And this big ass lump of a bullet just barrels through him, leaving a gaping wound.
Yes. It's good that it goes straight through, because again, this thing is like the size of a lemon. If it got stuck in him, things would be way worse. But, you know, like, he does now just have this gaping stomach hole. This does bleed. You know, this is an exception to that rule from before. But,
he stumbles for a second, but he does not slow down.
Yeah.
He moves a mm-hmm. big gate that requires 10 men to move. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'll be back later, or whatever.
And I love, like, you know, the a lesser movie would just have, you know, I mean, like in a video, you know, in Skyrim, if you go into a town and punch someone in the square, just everyone in town goes hostile immediately. But everyone here is like, hey, listen, dude, like, if our boss tells us to kill you, we're gonna have to, but we don't really want to. You did save our guys. Like, the nuance is always present. No, everyone pretty much likes him. They don't know why he's allied. Like, because he's carrying Princess Mononoke out with him, and that's, like, the ultimate enemy. But still, nobody just turns and immediately is like, he's evil, you know? Yeah.
And this is where basically the last third of the movie exists.
Yeah.
He manages to save her, and they're fleeing on his steed. When she wakes up, he's passed out because gaping gut wound.
Yes.
And she manages to get him to the center of the forest, the heart of it, the spiritual center,
mm-hmm.
where he happened to have walked through by when he was getting the men home and got a glimpse of the forest god, like the big mm-hmm. one.
This thing's really cool. Like, we were both really excited for whenever it was going to show up as we were rewatching, because it's just a big... You go ahead. I don't know if I'm going to do it justice.
Yeah, it's very deer-like in its physicality when during the day, at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
With just so many horns protruding out that it appears like a giant, massive crown, because it is very mm-hmm. circular.
And it's also, like, tree-esque. Yes. And, like, no leaves, but it's foresty, crowny.
Yeah, like, they look like antlers made of wood, mm-hmm. just rung around this around this monster's head, and its feet are a little different than, you know, a deer, but he does have that shape, except his face is just this humanoid red face
mm-hmm.
that, when extended, does have a more deer-esque shape to it. And it's just really cool and interesting. Yeah.
And the expression on the face is like, it's like an old, like an elderly face, and it always looks like he's about to tell you, like, a really stupid joke. like it's a whimsical kind of expression, and it never changes its expression. Like, this thing never talks. Like, it is, you know, we're going to get to, like, the entity around which the whole plot revolves, and everyone wants a piece of this guy, some more literally than others. But, you know, he is completely inscrutable, never speaks, and just shows up sometimes. Like, it's among the most animal-like entities in this, including all the animals. It's weird.
Yes, and every time that he walks, flowers grow from the from where his hooves yes. land, and immediately as he lifts his hooves, they decay. Mm-hmm. It's just really cool.
Yeah. And, like, you know, again, like, a stupid movie for babies would just be like, here's this guy, he makes flowers grow, flowers are good, nature's good, people are bad, you know, be nice to the trees and stuff. There's more to it than this. Like, this thing concerns the cycle of life and death, and every time he does anything, everyone's like, I didn't know he was gonna do that.
Mm-hmm. So, Princess Mononoke has left the main character here in the water, waiting, hopefully, for the forest spirit to come and maybe heal him, or just take him away. Mm-hmm. It can do either, and does do either occasionally.
Yes.
And it chooses to heal him, and he wakes up fully healed, except his arm.
Still well, yeah, affected. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the curse isn't gonna be that easy.
No. And he wakes up, she comes back, he's still very weak. She helps him get onto his feet, feeds him like a mama bird, because he's too weak to chew.
Literally, like, she has jerky and chews it up and spits it into his mouth, which is just, like, comes completely naturally to her, and he's, like, you know, not gonna say anything about it, but
yeah, like he's
clearly a little put off.
Like, he's appreciating the food. And yeah, it's clear he doesn't like this feeling, but at the same time, he is being fed and he needs that desperately.
Mm-hmm.
So, after this, she takes him back to her wolf's den, and he heals for probably a few days. And, in the meantime, while he's healing, there's things going on in the human realm. The monk that we saw only moments during the part where I kind of skipped over, honestly, he shows back up with some mercenaries with him. And they meet with Lady Eboshi and talk about the Emperor, who he's working for. He has a letter from the Emperor and all of that jazz. It's clear that the Emperor doesn't appreciate Lady Eboshi's land not, you know, giving him their medals and their stuff.
Yeah.
And she seems to have an agreement with this guy that if they bring the head of the forest god to the Emperor, that's it. Like, mm-hmm. they'll stop harassing them.
Yeah, yeah, peace treaty. We'll call it all off. Because, yeah, it's just merely the existence of Iron Town being there so that the Emperor does not have a bunch of guns is probably really good. The head of the forest spirit is supposed to be able to bring eternal life, and apparently that's the Emperor's whole deal, is like, he's getting old and feels the old Reaper coming around and does not want to succumb to that, so that's the, you know, the craving, like, get the head.
Mm-hmm. And this is when it becomes very clear and evident that there are multiple human factions and also animal factions. There's just many moving parts and many people who have their own designs and desires. And they're all in opposition to each other. And really, the only one that's shown as definitely the bad guy is just the Emperor and his goons.
Yeah.
And Lady Eboshi, you know, knowing this is the best way to protect her people, which I'm not 100% sure, but it always seemed to me like she might have just taken the forest spirit's head for herself, if possible. Like, mm-hmm. if she could betray them, she would have.
Well, Part of her angle here is, A, like, if you kill the forest spirit, the animals will no longer be a threat. Like, that will theoretically de-escalate the